all of these activists coming at these private equity funds and firms and coming at the BlackRock in specific of people who are like, they're evil. When you like, you're working in that industry, you're like, I'm not evil, guys. So what is that? Why is there that sentiment that exists? And is that something that you can relate to or that you've seen?
That's such a great question, and I never appreciated that sentiment until I got on social media and I was like, I had 50 followers and someone was commenting that on my post. I personally never felt it. I worked at a pretty small private equity fund. We were focused on founder-owned businesses and growth-oriented businesses. So when we bought a business, if we were having a round of layoffs, this was such a failure to us as a private equity fund. You know, like we do not see returns that way. So in like a evil technical sense, like we don't make any money that way. Like we only make money when we're helping grow this business, you know, 30% a year instead of 20% a year, which you were doing without us. And what I appreciated a lot about my fund, and what I think successful funds has continuously done, this is not unique to where I worked, was like really setting up the company for the success and realizing that like you as a private equity investor are not an operator. And what really great private equity funds do is they help find these founders and these CEOs great operators to help them build their business. And when you're helping build the business, you're bringing people financial security, you're bringing jobs to wherever you have this business in, you're expanding industry, you're giving creative solutions, you're helping out customers, you're doing a bunch of different things. Like even when I think about, I worked on like a hospital asset tracking platform. Like this will, because of the fact that now the cost of the hospital will be lower because they actually know where their 100K, you know, MRI machine is sitting and they don't have to order a new one, that gets passed along to the individual who then gets a lower bill. So there's all these great silver linings of like you are growing industry, and especially in the size that I was investing in, like we were actively competing against.
From the Sarah Smiles Network, I'm Sarah Smiles, and this is the Consider the Source podcast, a show about women who build ideas, movements, and careers by questioning the status quo and challenging norms. Thank you so much for coming on.
Of course, thank you for reaching out on TikTok as a person who's only been on TikTok for like a month.
You know what? Sometimes
everything.
Yeah, I feel like you got to get it in before they get rid of it, you know? You got to see what everyone's talking about.
I mean, I just like, I'm an Instagram Reels girl, and I
girl,
know
same.
That Reels is on a, like a delay. And then I like have a few friends who are like picking up some content on TikTok and are making a lot of content, and I thought, okay, like maybe it's my time to make some content. So here we are.
Yeah, no, as if you didn't have your schedule already filled with enough at work, you
I
know?
mean, I'm I just I can't sit on my hands a lot, and we just like weren't at, it was just also really nice timing that like when I started happened to be like the least busy time. And I like mentioned to this to you, like I no longer work in private equity. I still am in an M&A role. I'm just in an internal M&A role now.
Yeah.
And I am currently in a hotel room in a city where there's a company we're trying to buy. So, and I started this job 4 days ago.
Cool.
So things
Perfect.
Don't
Great.
get
Nothing
easier.
Like
They
good
just look
timing.
different. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. I love it. Yeah. I mean, I was in the realm of VC for a few years, which is like in, like a distant cousin to M&A and PE. So yeah, I definitely didn't feel like the extreme amount of stress that you probably felt in investment banking and in your just day-to-day life. But you know what? It was fun. It was groovy. It was something different. But yeah, definitely a lot of like knowing a lot about a bunch of different things and constantly like being able to adapt and move into new environments.
Yeah. You're kind of master of none in private equity in this weird way that you know a lot about businesses. Like I specifically did like software and tech enabled services. So I can tell you a lot about how digital ad agencies run, about how Azure partners do their deployments, about how like asset tracking is done for hospital equipment, but I could never join those businesses and run them. And that's where there kind of felt like there was a gap and why switching to an M&A role at a company is pretty interesting, because you're still doing M&A and the diligence you do is very similar, but then you actually have to integrate it into a broader business and like kind of help run that business in a lot of ways. So I'm not there yet. We haven't done any acquisitions yet, but I'm sure like the work I'm doing now feels like the same work over and over again. Like I just prepped a diligence for one of the deals we're looking at. But I think when it comes time to like, okay, now this has to run as a part of a broader business, especially I'm not at a tech company anymore. I'm at an entertainment business. It's going to be
fun.
It's really fun. It's really fun, but it's super different than any tech company.
I mean, I feel like it, when you go from niche to niche, and if you go from like sector to sector, it is so extremely different. And even just going from investing in it to working in it is just a completely different ballgame. But obviously, like with private equity and with mergers and acquisitions, there comes a lot of influence. And I also think that it's super interesting because influence with influencers right now, and the amount of people that are influencers that are becoming angel investors seemingly overnight, and the number of people that are influencing people to buy their product. Like, who do you think would have more influence, Kim Kardashian or a managing partner at Blackstone? Just theoretical.
Kim Kardashian, I mean, it kind of actually got proved out when Kim started Sky with somebody, and who that somebody was one of the biggest guys ever at either like KKR or Carlyle or something. Nobody really cared about him. I'm pretty like, I don't even remember which fund he was at, and I'm in private equity. And when Kim left, like, I don't know what the legs of this fund is really anymore. And I don't know if the guy that she started it with really cares. And I think that's just kind of the way that it is now. And it, like, that was a big inspiration for me to want to make finance content. I mean, I want to make it in a funny, understandable way, because there's so much like smoke and mirrors around private equity and venture and finance and all these things. So it kind of started of me teaching my girlfriends about things. But now, to see like very unqualified people making, telling people to make stock picks, telling people to get involved with crypto, telling people to start cutting 100K checks to startups, it's kind of gone a little bit off the rails of we've strayed too far away from just like good old fashioned knowledge and education to like everybody's kind of pitching something, which a buyer beware.
But that's what I've always heard is like when you hear about it, like if it is a company that you should be investing in, it's too late. Like if you hear about it and you're seeing it on the news or you're seeing it on like Fox or Yahoo Finance, like you are seeing it too late. Like it is not something that's going to benefit you.
Yeah, that's the basics of economics, actually. And like if you've taken an economics class in college, they should have taught you like the basic like cap and pricing model. And it's that all available publicly available knowledge has already been priced into assets. And that's super true for public stocks and you know, buying public equities. And it's definitely true for private companies because people have already looked at it. But it's just that kind of lack of understanding that like, okay, I can just, you know, there's so many traders who are like, I'm just following Nancy Pelosi's trades. I'm just doing all these things. Well, she's already done that. So that means you need to come up with something else, or you need to do, which I don't talk about this on my TikTok. I really want to. It's just like, I have such a list of things that I want to cover. I'm sure you get it. But like the real money is not for, let me just make a fantastic stock pick. It's like, I'm in my 20s. I have 40 years before I retire. I'm making X amount of money. How can I just put that money in the market and have it work for me? And when I blank, I can come back. And like, I haven't talked about this, but again, this is something I really want to talk to. Like if I stop working today, like I have enough money in my retirement to live on that retirement. And I'm 26. And that isn't because I like was in high like earner positions. That was definitely a portion. Is because I was so, like, for the past 4 or 5 years I've been working, I have, like, watched every single cent I've ever spent to make sure that I put myself in these positions. And, like, I don't day trade. I don't do any crypto. I have invested in real estate, but very limitedly. And I still get to retire. I can retire now if I'd like to in a lot of ways.
That'd be ideal.
There's a way to do it. It's just there's so much like allure of get rich quick, but that doesn't really exist.
Yeah. Well, I feel like that coupled with like instant gratification and the dopamine hits that everybody is getting at all times on social media and through all of these various outlets, that is the ultimate scheme. Is like Bitcoin, all these cryptocurrencies are the ultimate get rich quick scheme, allegedly. But then you see the rise and fall of specific coins, or you see the rise and fall of specific currencies. Like that to me is like definitely caution, buy with like what you said, buyer beware. Like that is, know what you're buying before you buy it. Like the Hawktua coin. Like what? Come on, guys, be so serious. I'm so over
be
it.
So serious. Yeah, I mean, like NFTs. Like who's talking about those anymore?
Ashton Kutcher, I think.
It's okay to like, it's okay to take risks. It's okay to do like, want to get involved in crypto and all of this, but just like, be really aware of what you're doing. And like, it's, if you're in a position where you're okay to lose money, try losing some money. If you're not, there's other ways to still grow generational wealth and still put yourself in a really great position to retire.
Yeah. And I feel like there's been a recent movement for mostly what I've seen is women, and this is probably just biased based on what I see on my social media platforms, but women taking ownership of their finances, of being like, okay, we've worked to get to this point of being able to have our own careers, have our own jobs. Finance equals freedom. And I want to be financially free. I want to have my own sense of freedom. And so you see all of these creators coming on with platforms. My favorite, Mrs. Dow Jones, she's an icon. She's a legend. If you don't follow her, highly recommend.
I do. She's great.
She's amazing. But you see all of these people come in, and like anything, you should consider the source. And how do you know whether someone that is giving advice is giving sound advice? Like, do you have to fact check everything they say, or how does that work?
It's just like, if something sounds good, too good to be true, it tends to be that way. I think when listening to finance influencers, like I really like, I like Miss Dow Jones. I like Vivi, your rich BFF. I think they're producing really fantastic content. I like more like corporate girls who are giving advice and things like that. And like, I really like Wall Street Wardrobe. I think she's super sharp and she has a great way of communicating. I just think like you need to use your own best judgment here. It doesn't take a lot of like searching and verifying. It's more like if something sounds crazy, it probably is crazy. But there's like two sides of it. When it comes to your money, you shouldn't be taking a lot of risks unless you can. And following influencers who are, you know, posting their Fidelity accounts every day and their Schwab accounts every day. Like if you think about where they're starting from, like they didn't start posting that when they were making $60,000 a year and they had a kid to support and all of this. Like, just be really conscious of like where you are in your financial journey, and then find a creator who kind of is with you there. And that's the same thing of like that I want to be with, kind of like college kids who are trying to figure out their careers and things like that. And like, if you don't, if I say something that sounds crazy, you should take the next step to do it. Like your only source of knowledge should never be an influencer. But
could you imagine?
Yeah, but it's
set your sources.
Because like I think influencers come, like the ones that I follow anyway, I think they come in with the best intentions of like, I didn't know this. I don't have a source to learn this. Let me then be the source to learn this. But like we're all just kind of the blind leading the blind in a lot of ways, because there's no like source of truth to any of this. It's just like, this worked for me, it might not work for you, so I'm just going to talk about what worked for me and hope that it helps somebody else.
Yeah, and I feel like that ultimately is kind of the hard part about finance, which is why it's so interesting that so many people are able to make careers out of it, like specifically in private equity or in venture capital, like where you get to influence a lot of the actions that happen. Now, I feel like with venture capital, it has a little bit of a better rap than private equity does, at least right now in the current climate, because you kind of see all of these activists coming at these private equity funds and firms. And coming at the like BlackRock in specific, of people who are like, they're evil. And when you like you're working in that industry, you're like, I'm not evil, guys. Like, please. So, what is that? Why is there that sentiment that exists? And is that something that you can relate to or that you've seen?
That's such a great question, and I never appreciated that sentiment until I got on social media and I was like, I had 50 followers and someone was commenting that on my posts. I personally never felt it. I worked at a pretty small private equity fund. We were focused on founder-owned businesses and growth-oriented businesses. So when we bought a business, if we were having a round of layoffs, this was such a failure to us as a private equity fund. You know, like we do not see returns that way. So in like a evil technical sense, like we don't make any money that way. Like we only make money when we're helping grow this business, you know, 30% a year instead of 20% a year, which you were doing without us. And what I appreciated a lot about my fund, and what I think successful funds has continuously done, this is not unique to where I worked, was like really setting up the company for the success and realizing that like you as a private equity investor are not an operator. And what really great private equity funds do is they help find these founders and these CEOs great operators to help them build their business. And when you're helping build the business, you're bringing people financial security, you're bringing jobs to wherever you have this business in, you're expanding industry, you're giving creative solutions, you're helping out customers, you're doing a bunch of different things. Like even when I think about, I worked on like a hospital asset tracking platform. Like this will, because of the fact that now the cost of the hospital will be lower because they actually know where their 100K, you know, MRI machine is sitting and they don't have to order a new one, that gets passed along to the individual who then gets a lower bill. So there's all these great silver linings of like you are growing industry, and especially in the size that I was investing in, like we were actively competing against, you know, the big guys. Like when I looked at a CRM, the goal was to compete against Salesforce and give like a founder who lived and breathed CRMs like an opportunity to compete. Where the evilness comes in, and I understand the bad rap of this, is private equity funds who are focused on like special situation or reconstruction type of work. Their goal is to buy it super cheap, rip it apart, sell it for parts. Like that still exists, but that's such a small portion of private equity funds that are actually doing that. Even for Blackstone, this is one team for them. Majority of their teams only benefit when it comes to growth. So I never felt like the evilness in it. I like loved seeing a founder's face when we were able to find somebody who, you know, worked at like a business that they were in and they found this fantastic solution. And because they found this fantastic solution, they were able to hire 20 more people or promote 10 of their people and start building like this whole new generation of people to work for. I get the argument, and to some extent it exists. But I think like it's not every private equity fund.
It's not the rule, it's the exception to the rule that exists.
In a lot of ways, yeah. And it's not a morality thing. It's just like that's actually just how private equity funds make money when businesses do well. So ripping apart a business is a sad day. Like my private equity fund has never closed the doors of a business. Like we just don't want to do that. And in the 20 some years my fund has been around, I think in maybe three RIFs, not even full closeouts, just RIFs to companies. And that company is now back, and all those people who got RIFed are at other roles, you know.
And I feel like that is such a good way of putting it, of we're actually here to help and support and continue the lifespan of these companies that were gonna die out without your help. And I feel like that's the part of the narrative that really isn't shared. And it's because it's not appealing, it's not sexy, it's not controversial, because we'd like to see big finance, like they're evil, you just want to manipulate, and it's all about capitalism. But at the end of the day, like, we are a capitalistic society, so if we can help others that are in those shoes where they want to continue their business, allowing them that opportunity to do that is still really important.
It's still really important, and like if you're in certain industries, you do get the opportunity to add values in a lot of ways. Like I am in an entertainment business that's private equity owned, and that was one of the reasons that was compelling to join. And like we now have this opportunity to put on way better quality shows, go off to a bigger reach, do bigger tours. You can see your favorite artists, your favorite Broadway, your favorite everything now, where prior to that, like, who knows if this business could have scaled in such a way without that help. And then I think this thing about, like, everybody getting, like, rich in finance is also this weird thing that's not true. Like, and also this, like, all of these barriers to entry are not as real as people think they are. I went to a super non-target school. You know, like, I went to St. John's University, Queens, and the school has an 85% acceptance rate. Anybody can attend.
Okay,
anybody can go major in finance. And if you, and I had no family members who worked in finance. My parents are immigrants. Like, nobody who worked in finance. I had no idea what private equity was. No idea what investment banking was. And I just kind of put the onus on me to say, okay, like, what do I want to do? What are my goals in my life? Like, am I acting on passion? Am I acting on financial goal? Am I acting on, like, talent that I have and I think I need to put into the world? And when I thought about my skill set, it always just kind of led me back here. And then once I kind of realized the avenue to put it in, like, I sat on LinkedIn every single day until I got a job.
Yeah.
And if anybody would like to do that, I think anybody is capable of doing that. And you too can get rich in finance if that's something you'd want to do.
Yeah.
Just know, like, it's not glamorous. It's kind of horrible.
Right.
Like, working 100 hours a week.
Like, yeah, there's a reason why the paycheck is so large. Like, you have nothing else to do because your life is the job.
Like, you work 2 40-hour weeks in 1 week. You work 80 hours. You are compensated accordingly. And if anyone wants to do it, you can do it. Like, it doesn't matter, like, where you're from or what school you are. Like, you don't even need to be that particularly smart. You just have to really want to do it. Like, that's the only requirement to get into investment banking. And, like, especially now, there's the emergence of all of these boutique investment banks that are like, okay, we only do $50 to $250 million software-focused deals, and we're 10 people. You can go work there, and you can make crazy money as a 22-year-old with barely a bachelor's degree. And you can go do that. You just have to want to do that. And I think especially now, with so much content around, like, how do I make money? How do I figure it out? Like, it's 100% the onus is now on you, and it's not the smoke and mirrors. Can you, do you benefit if your dad is a partner at JP Morgan? Yeah. But why don't you become the dad at JP Morgan? Like, you can become the dad. You can become the partner. You can totally do these things, and you don't need to come from, like, you don't need to come from, like, an Ivy League school to do it anymore.
Yeah, no, I remember I was on a trip with one of my friends from college, and his whole family was Ivy League graduates. And they were, like, talking to me about what my plans were after college and if I wanted to go to grad school. And I was like, oh, maybe if I go to grad school, I'd do it part time, like, while I continue my engineering work. And his dad looks at me and he's like, well, why would you keep going to school? Like, the point of business school is to network. And I'm like, well, who's funding that then? Because what are you talking about? But
I know,
yeah,
that was,
and then
a huge barrier for me with an MBA. I mean, I think that. For me, particularly, MBA is such a, you know, a hot topic of, like, it's worth it or not. And every private equity associate goes through the mental exercise of deciding. And I ultimately decided it wasn't for me. And maybe that changes in 2 years or something like that. But for right now, it's not for me. But it's wildly expensive. And the prep, the upfront cost to even get in of GMAT prep and tutors and application is so high. That portion of, I do think that portion of finance and academia is still very clouded in privilege and you just having to be in, like, a really opportune position.
Yeah, because it is wild. I'm like, I will never be at a point in my life where I can just afford to shell out $50,000
at least
a year and not have any income coming in, you know? Like,
yeah.
Shoddy's got to be working.
I think if you're really clear about what you want to do after, and you know that, like, I'm going to get my MBA because I want to get into investment banking and I want to make the starting salary for an investment banking associate MBA, which I think at this point is like 175 plus like 100K bonus or something like that.
Which, like, that is not that crazy anymore. No offense. Which,
And you're
okay,
living in New York.
I sound so pompous saying that, but like working in tech, like you can go to like a boot camp, like a coding boot camp for like fucking $1,000 or
Oh
something
my God.
and be a entry level engineer at a software company and be making that. Like,
Yeah.
the
I wonder if
opportunities are endless.
Endless, I wonder if Capital One still does that, but they had a boot camp where they paid you for 1 year to learn how to become an engineer. And the only requirement is that you had a bachelor's degree and a non-technical skill. So I know someone into this program who got an art history degree. She did it for 1 year. They paid her full software engineering salary. The contingency was she had to work at Capital One as an engineer for I think 2 years following that. You know, what a boondoggle, like what an opportunity. But you, did she have a particular passion for being a software engineer at a bank? No, dude, she wanted a check. And you too can get it. Like if that's what you want, it's available to you. And like you don't like the days of spending 200K at Harvard feels like we get farther and farther from that, which I think is really exciting. And I think that's how you like that's how you build equity in these types of companies. That's how you let people from different backgrounds really enter into something that's been predominantly male and predominantly white throughout its entire history. And I think like it's kind of like DEI has become kind of like this meme at this point. But when we think about like all of these things that have like the barriers have lowered to come into these things, it's come like more and more people are doing it and becomes less of a novelty that a woman is in the room or a person of color in the room. It's more like this is just how it is and we can keep going like this. And like there's so many industries that are getting better and better at this because the barriers to entry have just become lower.
And I feel like the more that you talk about that, the more that I think about like the TV show Suits. I don't know if you ever watch it. You remind me so much of Rachel Zane for some reason,
People
but
say I look like
anyway.
Meghan Markle.
You do. And I hope that you take that as a compliment and it's not in like an insidious way where it's actually and Megan, a Duchess of whatever, Sussex, whatever that.
I've gotten that in my real life, and then I got it a few times on TikTok, and I go, okay, I can confidently say that I look like her. I think she's very pretty, so I totally
Yeah,
accept
she's
that
gorgeous.
compliment.
Yeah, no, gorgeous. So yeah, no, 100%. But I was watching Suits with my boyfriend, and he was like, "This is not realistic. Like, this is too diversified to be a real like investment firm or what is it, a law office." He was like, "This is too diversified. I'm not buying into this." And so we Googled it, and it was actually kind of impressive at like how diversified each one of these fields has become in the last like 5, 6, 7 years.
It's so recent history. I think the stats now are for a law school, they're all 50-50 enrollment, and there was a point that the editor-in-chief of Law Review for every Ivy League was a woman. And we're getting so much better because like it is becoming more possible. You know, my sister is general counsel at a hedge fund, and she has two bosses and one is a woman and she's fantastic. And like, you know, she's walking around the floor every day at that hedge fund and seeing more and more female traders. There's opportunity. I think we're not as close as we need to be, but I think if I credit something to why it's become more possible, it's just because like there is more openness and opportunity, and the cost of buy-in has become way more reasonable. Like if I can go to a very easy to get in university, because I had okay grades in high school, I didn't really know what I wanted to do, to then land at an investment bank, I think it's very doable for a lot of people.
Well, on that same vein, so that brings me to a question that you might not know the answer to, but I'm going to ask it anyways. So when you say about like the buy-in being low, I think about the wage gap between men and women. And you have a similar degree or the exact same degree that a man has. However, said company can probably hire you for 15% less or whatever the actual gap is. I don't know what it is off the top of my head, but whatever that gap is different. So technically, they get a discount with work working with you. Do you feel that way, or is that something that you have seen, or is it like pretty much standard across like your industry for every entry-level position to start at the same salary?
I've never seen salary discrepancies amongst anyone.
Really?
When you're in an investment bank, I mean, people can correct me if they've seen differently. I personally haven't. When you enter into an investment banking analyst program, it is a 2-year program. They set you on a salary. When we got like at one point during my time in banking, they like upped the raise. We all got the same call. I think like this where it comes in. If it does come in, I saw things, I just like didn't think about it, and I let my work stand on its own. But there's only so far that that'll get you, unfortunately. And I think like the women who have been successful long term are the ones who kind of understand that like your work cannot stand alone, it has to be you too. And then I thought, okay, well, that's not really fair. I should just get to do great work. But the thing is, men aren't doing that. Men aren't just doing great work and then
They're
expecting to
advocating
get
on it.
promoted. They're 24/7 advocating for themselves. So I think as long as you are doing that great work and you are advocating for yourself, you can be in that same position. I think there's obviously a small percentage of old school bankers and stuff who have poor opinions and 30-year-old wives or whatever the fuck that they have, and like that is always going to exist to some extent. But I think you can be really strategic, and I think you can identify that really fast about a firm and then like move quickly. And then I think when you go, like if you're looking at Blackstone and you're looking at KKR and you're wanting to be an associate there after banking, they don't have as much as a diversity problem because all the best in class, Goldman bankers are going to KKR after, and Goldman analyst class for the past, like since COVID, has been really 50-50 women. So you have this opportunity. I think like where it really comes to call is when it's family planning time, actually. That's when you really start. And like if you see all the stats about women gaps, and the stats are a little fudged because they include blue collar and white collar, and I think like white collar, this pay gap between men and women doesn't exist as much as it does with blue collar workers, unfortunately. But where you actually do see, you can actually like a statistically significant gap will be after kids. I am family. I haven't had to navigate that. I have female mentors who have, and there's ways to do it, but it's very challenging, and I think that's when you need to just take advocacy for yourself for the next level and just be really conscious of the firm that you're working for.
Yeah, because that is ultimately what has driven women to stay single. And I want to say celibate, but they're not celibate. They're just not having children. So we're staying single, we're not having
Honestly,
kids.
like the men want that, like nobody wants children. I mean, like
Nobody wants children.
I'm was living in San Francisco, I'm back to New York City. I grew up in New York. Like getting married before 30 is strange in New York City. It's just not really like a thing, and it's because the men don't want it and the women don't want it, and I think we've all kind of agreed that there's way better ways to use our time. I don't know if that's the right answer or not, but both genders have looked at each other and go, we can wait a little longer.
Yeah, we can put this off. The lifespan is getting longer. We're living longer. We
Science is
don't need this
good.
yet. We just don't need this yet. No, I totally see that. And I myself, I'm like, I grew up in Ohio, and so I see a lot of people from Ohio. They're already married. All my best friends from high school, they're all married. I'm the weird one that's like, oh, well, Sarah's gonna be a spinster. She's gonna be alone for life. Like, shit, maybe, probably. I don't know.
You're
But
busy. Like
yeah. Yeah, we will see.
you're busy. That's the thing. You're busy. I don't know if you're maybe all your friends are busy, but you're busy.
They were busy doing something, I'll tell you that. But so obviously, like, no one just thinks of as a little kid of getting into private equity. At least I didn't, because I was a normal kid growing up and I enjoyed my childhood. But shit, maybe the people that grew up with parents in private equity, they might have had that thought. So at what point were you like, that is really what I want to do? I want to go into IB and then I want to go into PE and then maybe M&A from there. Like, that's a lot of acronyms. What is up with finance and acronyms, by the
We
way?
love
Like,
them. I mean, we love to act like our jobs is black magic when it's really not that much black magic.
it really kind of is, though.
For me, it happened really organically, which is not the norm at all. I have immigrant parents, and the classic immigrant parent thing is there's only three acceptable jobs: doctor, lawyer, and engineer, I guess, slash person in finance. And I kind of and I and I didn't have any like artistic talent. Like I played piano as a kid and I wasn't great, and I did track and field when I was a kid and I wasn't great. Like I just wasn't like I had no like I didn't give up any passion for this. I didn't give up anything. I mean, I knew that I liked numbers and I liked math, and I knew that, I thought tech was cool enough and I thought businesses were cool enough, and I was watching like Shark Tank as a kid and I thought that's neat and it would be nice to help. Like I don't have any ideas, but I felt even then that I could identify an idea. So when I went to college, I did what I think everybody should do if they don't know what they want to do in life, which is major in accounting. Because accounting is a fantastic career, and the retirement plans for Big Four partners are the best retirement plans, better than teachers and cops. Like it's the craziest thing, and it's a conversation for another day. So I went into accounting thinking this is a good default. I've hit enough requirements. I got an offer from an accounting firm to do M&A due diligence, which is essentially like support for investment bankers doing an acquisition. You do like extra accounting work, basically validating all the data the investment bankers received or the acquiring party has. Depends on the side that you're sitting on. The recruiter who knew me in college, because I was a freshman at networking events because my sister told me to go and I thought that made sense, was like, Nicole, I think you're gonna be so miserable as an accountant. You need to find something else to do. And I think investment banking would be a nice fit for you. And I said to her, what is investment banking? There was
Valid
one kid
question.
at my college who managed to land like a Goldman internship. I remember this. He was a big deal for landing this Goldman internship. And he did an LBO, leverage buyout walkthrough, which is what is the basis of private equity and how we buy businesses. And it was the most confusing thing I ever seen. And at that point, I had taken high-level calculus courses, I had taken Python and C++ coding courses, and this LBO was the most complex thing I could ever wrap my head around. And I thought, I am not smart enough to get into investment banking at all. There's no way I can do this. The recruiter said, like, talk to the this accounting firm happened to have an investment bank connected to them, like an M&A advisory. Would you be interested in speaking to some of the bankers there? I spoke to them and I was very upfront. I said, listen, I don't get what this is. I don't get how I'm smart enough to do it. I don't know anything. And they did such a great job of demystifying it all for me and made it really simple about what it is. You meet a business, you try to sell the business, you're basically a glorified marketer, and you're trying to sell the business to either a private equity fund who wants to buy them and sell them again later, or you're selling it to a strategic, a company who wants to put in their broader business. I thought, okay, well, that makes sense to me, and I can probably learn to do an LBO. I ended up interviewing for their investment bank. Again, unclear what I wanted to do. In fact, that I was even signed up to do a master's degree in applied computational math because I was so unclear about what I wanted to do. And I did that. And there was one guy there, he's still my mentor. And they were not super, I now know this, they were not super excited about hiring me because they thought that I would never join because I was doing this
Why?
master's. Because I was doing this master's and I had historically shown no interest. And
Clearly, this girl's got too much going on.
I did an internship at a fintech company and I did an internship in data analytics at a bank. So they're like, she's a technician. She's like never gonna sign up to be a banker. She's gonna be bored, because there's a lot of admin and stuff related to banking. He and me just vibed in the interview and he goes, give her a shot. She's clearly smart. Like, let her kind of just do this and figure it out. I did the internship and it was a COVID internship. It was super limited, but I thought, this is cool. Like I feel like I'm getting to know businesses. I feel like I'm building out my technical skill. I can see senior bankers like using soft skills and communicating and pitching and being like the fanciest car salesman in the history of the world because instead of selling cars, they're selling companies. And I thought, and then I found out how much money you make, to be honest. I found out how much money I can make and I don't have to go to grad school. And all I need to do is like, and I don't need to be particularly technical and I don't need to be particularly smart. The only requirement was I had to want to be there and I had to work hard. And I thought I could do that. And I signed up And then after that, it was kind of just like a natural progression of I was a lowly investment banking analyst, and you kind of just go into private equity because banking is too complex and private equity is the same hours, but you at least get to control your hours.
Yeah. So honestly, like the entire part of that story that's so mind-boggling to me is the fact that you're like, yeah, I guess I'm not smart enough to do that. And then here you are, like, and easy breezy, like, everything makes sense. Everything's clicking. I'm able to progress and work through where I want to see my career growth. Like, it's just so amazing to see that. So my question is once you got your degree and once you started working your first job, what was that feeling like? Because I remember for me, I had always wanted to work in Boston as a mechanical engineer. As soon as I got there, I was like, okay, and why did I do this? Like, what was the point?
I never had a why am I doing this? What was the point thing? I had a chip on my shoulder coming into investment banking. I was, I joined with kids who went to Columbia and went to Harvard, and I really had such an ego problem. I'm not smart enough. I don't want to say ego problem, more like the imposter syndrome of like, I'm not smart enough. I'm not supposed to be here. I don't actually know what an LBO is, and it's too late to ask. And like, there was so much, like, I couldn't like get over myself. And I think like that was the mistake. Like I ended up lateraling banks because I moved to Rothschild. I moved to a larger bank. And I think like the mistake I made at my first one is like, I let myself stand in my way too much. And when I lateraled banks, that same mentor who, you know, got me my first job in the first place, he said, you need to get over yourself. Like, you need to stop. I hope at this point you realize that nobody in investment banking is a genius. Like, nobody is an engineer. Nobody is a genius. Like, you are capable if you want to be capable. And that was a really, like, life-changing piece of advice for me. That, like, it didn't matter anymore. I had done the hard thing. I had gotten in, and now it was just about me like getting out of my own way and being there. And I first saw that of like how easy it was for me to lateral banks. Like I had interviewed at three places and I had gotten two offers, and that was completely not the case coming out of undergrad. It was more like in undergrad, I maybe interviewed at 80 places and got one offer. So once like I gave myself that ability to say like, you're supposed to be here. You don't need to be a genius. You just need to want to be here. It felt like I was doing the right thing. I think where there was a little bit of like, what the fuck am I doing was more around like the way I was treating myself in between, like the way that I couldn't unplug and I couldn't let things go. And like, let's say I had a bad day, like it would be a bad day for everybody in my life if I had a bad day. And my best friend who's getting married in 2 weeks, like she came to me and she goes, it can't be like this with us anymore. Like your whole personality cannot be work. And there's so many people in finance who are like that. I mean, I know it when I went on dates with guys who are in investment banking and all they wanted to do was talk about investment banking. And I was in it, I didn't want to talk about it. That like... So like,
hey guys, I'm actually clocked out.
The day is done. We're at drinks, you know, like we're at some rooftop in Manhattan having a freaking martini. Like, let's just have the martini. And I think like once I like A, got over my chip, and then I B, gave myself permission to say like, I am more than just some job. That's when it started feeling like I knew what I was doing and I was getting momentum. And then once I switched to private equity and I was getting like a lot of positive feedback, because like in banking, you don't get any feedback. It's just kind of like you're doing this work and you've sent it and the deal is done and you move to the next thing. And like maybe somebody's working for a really nice person who's giving them a lot of critique and a lot of this. It wasn't like that for me. It was just do my job and move to the next thing. In private equity, it's way more of a mentorship model, especially if you're at a small fund like mine. And I was getting positive feedback. I was getting negative feedback. I was getting things like really actionable things I could do every day. And I saw myself getting better. I thought, okay, like this feels like a nice place to be. And I want to keep chasing this feeling in my career. And I feel like that was a big motivator to move to this next role, other than personally wanting to move back to New York, was feeling like my boss understood that is like something I needed in my career.
Yeah.
It's like a million thoughts at once.
No, it's great. And I feel like there's so many things to unpack with that. But first, starting with, so with the chip on your shoulder, how did that look to manifest? So obviously, like if you feel like you're an imposter, you're going to try and prove yourself. But in what ways did that really present itself?
It weirdly didn't present itself in trying to prove, like overly do it. It kind of just felt
Okay.
like I had to just give up on things. Like if something
Really?
got super complex and super difficult, I go, I'm not a very bright person. I'm not supposed to know how to do this. It doesn't
Okay.
matter. And I would
Okay.
like lean on an associate maybe more than I should have, or I'd lean on a VP maybe more than I should have to do something. And I only even kind of noticed I did that when I had my first performance review. And I was like, it's clear when Nicole likes something. Because when Nicole likes it, she does an incredible job and she's 100% focused and she's following up and she's organized and she's everything. When Nicole doesn't like to do something, it looks like crap and she doesn't know what's happening on her, like, all of that kind of thing. And that was such great feedback to me because I was like, in life, you don't always get to do what you want to do. And getting to do the hard stuff is where you like actually improve. Because I like to do things because they're easy, right? Like of course we like to do things because they're easy. But
Well,
things became
sometimes
easy.
things are easy because you like to do them.
Yeah. And then things, but hard things can become easy things and we can like those easy things now. So it weirdly manifested in this kind of like, I am just a failure, I should be a failure mentality. And I like it was crazy how like as much there's so much like memes about finance people, like how intuitive a lot of finance people are, and like the fact that 6 months into a job, like multiple people had identified this about me, and maybe they didn't identify it that it was specifically because of the fact that I didn't go to an Ivy League school or didn't come from a traditional background or anything, but they could tell how it was manifesting like even before I could.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's so interesting. And I love when people in finance use the word like manifesting or like intuition, because to me, in my brain, I have just learned of this word called woo-woo, which I don't know if you know what that
Only.
is. Didn't think you would. It's a very much so like a Colorado term for like spiritual people, of like people that do tarot and people that like carry around crystals. It's woo-woo. So for me to hear, like, I just got off a different podcast with another girl who was very much so quote unquote woo-woo, and then for you to say intuition, and I'm like, girl, those th they're so different. They're so different. But yes, 100%. And I love that. I feel like I also, when I first start jobs, I do the same thing. I'm like, I'm not really sure what I'm supposed to be doing, so I'm gonna personality hire my way around here and see like who knows what, who do I need to go to for information. But there's also a lot of skill in that. There's a lot of skill of accepting what you don't know and accepting what you're not good at and finding other people that know the answers. There's a skill in that. So I feel like if there's anything to have a chip on your shoulder about of being like, I can't do this, like then you sure as shit can talk to people because not a lot of people can.
Yeah, that's the one thing I think I do give myself like credit for, and I don't know if it's because my sister forced me to go to networking events when I was 18 to start learning to talk to people, or because when I was in high school I did science research, and when you present in science research they mark every time you pause too much or you say I don't know specifically like how I learned to really socialize with people, but that part always came very naturally, and I thought, okay, if I can kind of win over people will teach me. And my mentor, even though he will never admit this about us, I know that's why he liked me so much and like why he was able to like sit down and like kind of catch me up, because I did show up to my internship pretty behind because I was not prepping, I was not studying, I was not in some investment banking program in my college that like I think it just took like me being a little bit likable and him seeing a willingness to kind of get there. And that's like the one thing I want to like remind investment banking analysts, like end of the day anything in finance is a social job. Actually, like to take even a farther step back, every job is a social job. I don't care if you are a scientist, you are an engineer, I mean you can attest to this much better than me. It doesn't matter how good you are, you need to be sociable, you need to be able to network and advocate for yourself. I even saw it the other day where someone who was on, at my new company, and she's a welder, And mm-hmm. she heard somebody talking about an opening and rigging, and that's a, you know, they pay a dollar hour better or something. And she was so fast to go, I have a rigging cert. I'd love to be considered. We're 3 days into the job. And she was so fast to do that. You know, not a technical person at all. Doesn't have a bachelor's degree. She's only has trade degrees.
Yeah.
And she still knew the importance of self-advocacy and the importance of networking. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. it was so great to see that. And it really, like, reminded me that anybody can, everybody and anybody should be doing this. And it's the only way you can mm-hmm. get ahead in any career.
Yeah. And so as we look to close out the session, but what is, like, advice that you would give to women that want to get into finance, whether it's IB, PE, VC, M&A, whatever other acronym there is that we want to throw out there? Like, what's your advice?
Don't be afraid. Like, fear is the thing that stops women in every corner. It stops anybody mm-hmm. in every corner. You know, I think even there are guys who feel like they shouldn't be in certain spaces, but you just need to trust your own ability to work hard, not your own intelligence, because you don't know what mm-hmm. your own intelligence is yet, especially when you're so young. It's you need to trust your ability to work hard is the first thing.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're not sure, it's okay to be wrong. Just try mm-hmm. to make more right decisions than wrong decisions. If something mm-hmm. feels like you could be okay at it and it's not hurting you, like, why not spend a year or two trying to do it and then figure mm-hmm. it out if it worked and put up your head and say, okay, this sucked. Let me go try again. And mm-hmm. okay, no, this was great. I should keep moving forward.
So yeah.
Be as fearless as you possibly can be, and it's totally okay to make wrong decisions. Just make more mm-hmm. right ones than wrong, and life will turn out even.
Yeah. If there's anything that I have learned being in a male-dominated field, it is truly stick-to-itiveness. Mm-hmm. Like, there are so many people that will just give up, and if you have the skill of being the last person to give up, that'll get you so much further. Like, you genuinely, like what you just said, you do not need to be smart. You do not need to know everything, be a genius. You do not need to be technically skilled. If you do not give up, you will win so many of those battles and of those challenges that you have with yourself, that you have with others. Like, and that is to be said about virtually anything. Of if mm-hmm. your stick-to-itiveness is your greatest asset, you will be so successful.
Absolutely. And nothing is truer in a career in finance, I can promise you, as a person who did not go to a fancy school, that your ability to work is worth spades over any intelligence you think you need.
Mm-hmm. Preach. Amen. Well, Nicole, thank you so much for hopping on with me. I know that you have, like, the most crazy schedule with starting your job. Yeah, of course. If there's any way that I can return the favor, but let me know if there's anything that I'll repost your little TikToks and all of the fun videos you make.
I have, like, a formal name now, actually, that I'm trying to go with.
The Corp Chick
is my new TikTok handle.
Love.
So follow. I will eventually get on Instagram when I figure out how to use Instagram, and I will eventually get on Twitter when I know how to use Twitter. But
girl, what, do you live under a rock?
I don't want to do social media. I just want to make jokes. But you know, you have to.
Yeah.
You need social media for jokes.
Yeah, I have come to learn that. And yes. You know what? What has been humbling? I went down this little bit of a tangent, but I went down this journey of, like, I'm gonna do stand-up comedy. Okay,
well, I've seen your posts. They're very funny.
Girl, the way in which I have gone to stand-up comedy clubs, and I'm just up there, crickets. I'm like, oh. So let me tell you what, keep it to social media. It's much better for the ego.
I admire you. I've had a lot of friends who are like, Nicole, you should do stand-up. I go, you hate me if you want to throw me to the wolves like that. That's nuts. Shut up.
No, but it is fun. And, like, honestly, public speaking, being able to be good at, like, reading a room, talking, very important. But also, if you're interested in ever getting humbled, just step on up there, say something that you think is funny, and they will straight up stare you in the face like this. I tried to make a joke about engineering, and I tried to make a joke about engineering, and I was like, my tutor in college was literally a football player, hit his head against other people's heads, and now plays in the NFL, and I'm the engineer. And, like, that was the joke. And everyone was like,
it's funny.
Like, what?
You're not really right crowds, though.
That was it. That was the bit. Come on. Yeah.
You gotta laugh.
Yeah, you kind of, and one of my other friends, he's trying to become a stand-up comedian. He was like, yeah, you kind of have to dumb yourself down. I think you're a little bit too smart to be doing. I'm like, so what is it? I'm too dumb for engineering, but I'm too smart for stand-up comedy. Where's the middle ground?
You just gotta try everything and hope one sticks.
That's the truth.
Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Consider the Source podcast. If you're not already, please make sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And make sure to check us out on YouTube because the videos do get posted there every Wednesday. And then if you haven't already, make sure you leave a comment. Make sure you leave a 5-star review. Make sure that you're following me on social media at Sarah Smiles Network everywhere. And I hope you have a great rest of your day. And make sure to tune in next week for another episode of the Consider the Source podcast. Bye.